Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is the author of the upcoming book, How to Buy a Gorilla, David Meikle. How are you today, David?
Good, thanks.
It's good to have you here in the studio, and we're happy to have you as our first guest on the new season. And for our audience, David is a business and marketing consultant and strategist. He specializes in advertising, performance management, agency sourcing, and selection. He deals with marketing process and design and marketing procurement. Before founding Salt Partners in 2009, David had a career in advertising spanning more than two decades. David has delivered training and keynote presentations for the IPA, ISBA, the EACA, and the Direct Marketing Association. Our first question to any guest on the podcast is, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, How to Buy a Gorilla set out to solve an endemic problem in the marketing community, which is that there is a conflict that exists in many relationships between advertisers and their agencies. In fact, it's a complex problem because it involves procurement and marketing and advertising agencies. Mostly the problem could be summed up as agencies are financially much more insecure than they used to be. Procurement are charged with saving money in marketing, and marketers are looking for greater returns on their investment. So at the moment, the problem is that these three parties that are responsible for generating huge amounts of return on significant investments don't actually have clear shared interests in how they're going about working together. And the result of that is diminished value from the agencies to the advertisers and diminished returns on investment. And that's something that I thought needed to be addressed. So I spent quite a long time trying to figure out how to unpick this relationship triangle and yes. And then sew it back into something that is much more constructive.
Absolutely. And this sounds fascinating. However, I want to go back to something that really does stick out about this title, and that it has a very distinctive name, the title of the book.
Yes.
Can you tell us the story behind it?
The story behind it is that in about 2007 saw a commercial for Cadbury's chocolate, which featured a gorilla playing a drum kit, which became instantly famous. But in 2009, the circuit of marketers looking for new agencies were basically saying that they wanted to buy a gorilla. We want to buy the next gorilla. We want that kind of advertising. And it was based on that insight that actually marketers do want what I'm now terming as a gorilla more broadly, meaning really high impact, distinctive, breakthrough advertising. That there's a desire for that, but actually they don't seem to come along that often. And often they are, when they do come along, they're more out of serendipity than design. And actually, the way we can make advertisers and agencies work together could actually make them a bit easier to develop, shall we say.
Right. So I guess the term gorilla has become a bit of a kind of insider name, I would say. And going back to the Cadbury Gorilla ad, it was such a huge success at the time. I mean, I personally remember, you know, being constantly out there on TV, you know, the news, the newspapers, radio, whatever it may be. But there was no sign of chocolate within the ad. Nothing to do with Cadbury's actual product.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, that's part and parcel of the whole thing. I mean, most marketers, when they're briefing their agencies for a new campaign, brief for something breakthrough. But often the agency and the client can be divided by a common language in terms of they have different ideas of what breakthrough means. For marketers, often breakthrough means I want a new idea that's really good, but within the conventions of normal advertising, i.e. we will tell a story using a side-by-side comparison, we will have a product demonstration, we will do the normal box-ticking exercises of what makes theoretically a good ad, but that is in itself formulaic, and formula never produces anything original by the very nature of it being a formula. It's kind of self-evident. So the funny thing about the Cadbury's Gorilla ad is that it doesn't have the pouring shot, it doesn't have the luscious demonstration sequence and all of the normal taste cues that you would find conventional in the confectionery category. But it doesn't diminish its impact. In fact, it enhances its impact. It's much more pure to the idea. And in fact, the lusciousness, the taste experience, which is the brief behind the ad, how does it feel to eat Cadbury's chocolate, comes across in a metaphor. But that metaphor is much more powerful for not having been disrupted by demonstration sequences and normal advertising convention, if you like. So it's the very fact that it didn't apply to these conventions that made it breakthrough in many ways.
I see that. That sounds very fascinating, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, for me, you know, when I first watched it, I was completely taken in. I thought, you know, what is this? Where is it going? And it certainly did catch my interest, and it was, you know, such a success. But going forward, you know, there are so many brands today, and they're unable to catch their gorilla, and they fail to expire the way Cadbury did. Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of the time it's to do with the way clients and agencies are engaging on a number of levels. When I wrote How to Buy a Gorilla, I looked at two sides of it. One is how clients pay their agencies, and that in turn will logically dictate the kind of priority they receive as a client within a portfolio of clients in any advertising agency. And the other is how they work together. Now, if you were to go down a path to say, we want to buy a gorilla, then what I'm arguing is that you actually need to decide and design how you're going to work together to do that. Do you want to have a gorilla that works within the normal conventions of advertising? So we want a gorilla, but it has to have a demo shot. We want a gorilla, but it has to have a pack shot at the end with all of our other variants. We want to buy a gorilla, but it has to be a 30-second ad, and we can't do any longer than that. All of these things start constraining the ability for the agency to produce something truly original. So what I've tried to do is make clear the differentiation between what I'm coining as a gorilla and other more conventional types of advertising, which are or can be effective, but have a different risk profile vis-a-vis what are normal advertising conventions, if you like.
Right. And going back to the book, Ende, you talk about other types of monkeys, not just the gorilla.
No.
So can you tell us a bit about how are they different from what you describe as a gorilla within the book?
The reason I needed to introduce a couple of other primates, as bizarre as it sounds, is that different clients have different business problems and different brands have different objectives. And to try and categorize all brands and all objectives and all business problems in one best practice idea of ways of working seems foolish. If I was to say that you would employ the same processes and procedures to develop ads for a payday loans company as you would do for a high-end fashion brand, you would think immediately that that's insane. But there isn't currently in the market a clear way of differentiating between them. Equally, you have different market positions. So, for example, if you're a brand which is a new entrant to the market, you're going to have very low market share and you will have a very low amount of investment, but you're going to be competing with other brands out there that are already established gorillas. So for someone with a small market share and a small investment, they have to have a higher risk profile. Basically because economics dictates you can't get a high return from a small investment without high risk. So for those brands, I've coined the term spider monkey. A spider monkey being a metaphor for a, you know, cheeky little animal that runs in, steals some market share, does it in a very engaging and entertaining way.
Yes.
So it's a kind of a shorthand for saying we've got a spider monkey kind of problem. At the other end of the scale, if you've got a market which is a lot more stable, So there aren't many new entrants into the market that are challenging your market share. There's still a need for brand presence to maintain your market position. Then you want a lower risk profile, because this is a cash cow for your business. So you wouldn't want something that would potentially polarize or turn off existing customers. You would be you wouldn't have the need to inspire your existing customers' loyalty, because no one else is challenging it. You just need a more gentle, safer reminder that you're the brand that engages with them. Now, for that business problem, I've coined the term an orangutan, largely because everyone loves an orangutan. They're the crowd pleaser. They're strong. They're still, you know, it's still a mighty ape, but at the same time, they are more reliable. They're slower moving. So it's a more cautious approach to maintaining and slowly growing brand share, as opposed to something which would be recognizing a tougher competitive set. So you'd use a gorilla if you are in an active market that's in growth. So imagine if you're in the smartphone market. If you're in the smartphone market and you're doing fairly safe advertising, it's not going to cut through compared to market leaders who are employing gorillas. So an orangutan in a gorilla market will lose market share. Orangutans in an orangutan market can duke it out in a sort of slower level. But in the growth markets, you'll see new entrants, spider monkeys fighting gorillas. And it kind of, the whole metaphor starts to make sense.
Yeah.
But it's centered on the business problem.
Yeah.
Equally, there aren't necessarily rules. It might be that if you are a market position where you're a brand leader and it's an active market, but you cannot employ or you don't want to employ a risk profile consistent with a gorilla, then you might say, okay, we're just going to play it safe for a little while and use an orangutan. But then you agree with your agency that that's your strategy, because that's the best way to suit your business problem. So if you were to take, for example, Procter & Gamble, they are a considered and very well executed orangutan company. They don't do high-level, high-creative advertising that break the rules of convention I spoke about earlier. But they don't do that for a reason. If a fabric conditioner brand in their portfolio suddenly started to perform really well, it would be stealing from other fabric conditioner brands that they have in their portfolio. So they are deliberately and cleverly prescriptive for a more predictable return on investment. Whereas if you are a single brand in a category like that, you would, and it's a growth category, you might go for a gorilla. Because that doesn't mind where its source of business is coming from. It's just sort of out there chest thumping and yes, getting people behind it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great way of describing something that is quite complicated, to
yes,
be honest.
Exactly.
Now, David, you've given us an explanation, but can you give us some examples or case studies of sort of, you know, current gorillas or spider monkeys out there in the market?
Sure. A couple of years ago, which is still fairly recent, Direct Line started a very new campaign for them. It broke with a lot of conventions in the insurance category when they started the Harvey Keitel Direct Line campaign through Saatchi & Saatchi. This was a massive departure for the financial services industry, and represented relatively, you know, high risk in breaking such conventions for what is, by its very nature, a risk-averse category, because you're in the insurance business. Risk is a four-letter word in the insurance business. But through that departure, they've seen stellar results. I mean, the return on investment has been phenomenal for that business, because they produced something which is distinctive, engaging, relevant, and it broke those rules. The reason that it stood out was because it wasn't conventional. And it has proved over the years since it launched the most successful thing they've done for a very long time. But equally, they've also recently done an ingenious campaign, which I would describe as a spider monkey, which was about these LED drones. I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh, no, so, please do tell.
So there was a sort of a futuristic proposition of if you're in a darkly lit street, or if you're cycling on a cycle path that isn't lit, then these drones actually light your way with LEDs, so you can see where you're going, thus minimising your risk of accident or assault, which I thought was ingenious. But that was a clever combination of complementing a gorilla with a different sort of spider monkey thing. On the subject of spider monkeys, an interesting brand to look at is Paddy Power, the online gaming business, because Paddy Power seem to just regularly use spider monkeys as these huge attention-grabbing campaigns that come out. They're very tactical. They're often very current, so they'll respond to something in the sports news. You had skywriting over the golf tournament for Tiger Woods, for example.
Yes,
there were all sorts of really interesting things, and each time they do, they get massive amounts of coverage. They're spider monkeys because they're not afraid to polarize opinion in the general public, but they know that they will appeal to their core base. So it's a very clever use of what would be termed polarizing campaigns, but also based on the important understanding that you can't tell a very funny joke that everyone finds very funny.
Yes.
So if you want to find a funny joke, if you want to get people behind your brand, be prepared for it to polarize if you're going to use a spider monkey strategy. That's why some people would consider them higher risk, because of course you're going to turn as many people off as you turn on.
Absolutely.
Potentially.
Absolutely.
But those that turn on become very, very loyal.
Wow, that sounds very intriguing, and thank you for giving us those examples, David. And actually, the last question that we ask all guests on a podcast is, what are you currently reading?
I'm currently reading The 1% Windfall by Rafi Mohamed. The subtitle is How Successful Companies Use Price to Profit and Grow. It's an interesting read. I'm not all the way through it, but I understand that the basic proposition is that if companies look more at their pricing propositions, then there are opportunities for profitability that way that don't depend on cutting costs as a means for profitability. The reason that cutting costs is increasingly under attack is that, obviously, logically speaking, there's a diminishing return. You can't just keep cutting costs. So this is an examination of how marginal increases across fast-moving consumer goods, for example, can produce very high profit yields. There's a study that said of the top 1,200 global brands that if they raised their prices just 1%, the average operating profits would increase by 11%.
Wow.
Now, this is particularly poignant for brands to consider in terms of the advertising context, because one of the benefits of having a guerrilla-style brand with that kind of momentum and that kind of excitement and that kind of loyalty is that you can essentially invest in your ability to use price elasticity. So if you look at Apple products at the moment, you can buy a laptop for £300, you can buy an Apple for £1,700, and people are still spending £1,700 on an Apple laptop. Now, that's not because their cost of goods is the same as a £300 laptop. Now, I'm sure it's more expensive with your aluminium case and so on, but the margin in that will be nothing short of eye-watering.
Yes,
however,
absolutely.
Because of the loyalty to the brand, and the brand plays a huge part, not just the tech, but the brand, they can command these kinds of prices, the same with the iPhone and so on. Now, with the time of economic uncertainty that we have, with cost of goods being quite volatile, the exchange rate is having an effect on all sorts of businesses that import goods and then repackage or components that repackage. If you haven't got price elasticity, then you're losing margin. So if you invest in your brand and you have got price elasticity because you are using your advertising as a brand builder, then in fact your opportunity for profitability is even greater. And in times like this, I would have thought that the demand for brands that are strong enough to have elastic pricing is going to be greater than ever.
Yes, absolutely. Amazing. Thank you so much for the for the wonderful insight, David. And with that, I would also like to thank all of our listeners for joining us today on the brand new season of Lid Radio. And as always, all relevant information and links about Lid Publishing, How to Buy a Gorilla, and David will be in the description below. So please do check them out if you are interested in knowing more about what we talked about today. And we look forward to seeing you next time on the show.